Tanya Marla, and there's been a slight change in the programme, so I'm going to be talking about why meditate. So if you came to hear about the Buddha, unfortunately that happened at 12 o'clock, so there's just been a slight change in the programme. So I apologise for that. So I'm going to ramble on, give a talk about why to meditate, or why I think meditation's good, or maybe what other people think as well. And then there'll be some, you know, I'd like it to be interactive. So, you know, I might ask people questions or you can ask me questions. So as we go along. So what to start with is would be useful for me to know if anybody here has experience of meditation. You could just put your hands up. So a few of you. Experience of meditation at the LBC or any of our other centres. You? Okay, great. Okay. Yeah. You've been here, yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know. So, why meditate? I thought it was very interesting, actually, just to start off with, because we have a thing on the program which is learn to meditate, and it kind of tells you why. And I thought, well, that kind of answers a question in a way of why to meditate. And it says, no matter where one is, who we're with, it's our mind that determines our experience. The state of our minds is the state of our life. By creatively working with our minds, we can change our lives. I think that's, you know, that's one way to put it. There are many ways to talk about meditation. And I suppose in a way that's why to meditate, if that's what we want to do, if we want to change our lives. And changing our lives from a meditation. Welcome, come in. Welcome. There's three spaces down here if you need... Oh, no, there's more, actually, down here if you need them. So we're talking about why meditate. And I guess we've all got different reasons for meditation and why we're drawn to it. Come in. Come in. You're very welcome. There's plenty of space. we've all got various reasons why we would want to meditate, and certainly for me over the last 20 years those reasons have changed, because my life has changed, so the reasons for me wanting to meditate have changed. And in some ways it's about having that flexible mind, and each day, you know, I might meditate for a different reason, or I might be focused on why to meditate for a few weeks, few months, or a few years. And that's about being aware of what I need and what I want to be working with. But as an introduction, from the Buddhist perspective, or from the Buddha's perspective, has anybody heard of the Wheel of Life? Yeah, a couple of people. So on the Wheel of Life, right in the centre, there's three animals, I'll put it that way. There's a cockerel, a snake and a pig. And they represent on the Wheel of Life in Buddhism... greed, hatred and delusion. And the pig is deluded because it's always rolling around and eating mud, apparently. I don't know if it actually eats it, but rolling around in mud, and it's thick and it's not really seeing things very clearly. The cockerel is, welcome, come in. The cockerel is always scraping the ground looking for something, so that's craving. So they're always looking for something to eat, looking something to do, lusting after something. And the snake represents hatred. So it's the poison in the snake that represents hatred. So it's greed, hatred and delusion. So they're sort of a core for us to be working with and with our minds. So when one is meditating, we're particularly working with those three aspects that I can certainly relate to. I mean, has people here heard of mindfulness meditation? Yeah. Metta Bhavana, yeah, a few people. Okay, so mindfulness is very well known nowadays. There's even a government paper on mindfulness, A Mindful Nation, which is very interesting in itself. So there's the two main meditations that we teach here. Welcome. Hi, nice to see you. So I'm just talking about why to meditate. So yeah, there's the mindfulness of breathing and other mindfulness ways of working with ourselves, which is around focusing our mind on one aspect, which can help train the mind. So any meditation can help train the mind and help us to let go of what we what I was talking about, the three poisons, greed, hatred and delusion. Because most of the time we spend our life either grasping after something or having an aversion to it. And working with our mind in meditation can help us come to a bit more equanimity, so we're not pulled in those two directions, those two extremes. And it doesn't mean that we don't still experience it, but it does get looser as we meditate. It doesn't grab hold of us. And the idea is that we start to react creatively rather than just a reaction, that we can respond creatively to what's going on in our mind and not just react from what's going on in our mind. I don't know if anybody's sort of heard this, but what we think isn't necessarily true, and don't believe everything that you think. Our mind is amazing and it tells us amazing things, but quite often they're not true and they're stories that we can make up. So meditation can help us let go of some of those stories as well. So there's the craving and aversion. The craving and aversion is around hatred and lust. So we're craving or we're not wanting it to happen. And you know, when we have the middle path, the middle way, when we have that experience, it's very pleasant. You know, I'm sure everybody's had those moments where you feel quite calm, quite peaceful, quite happy. Those are the moments that can increase when we meditate. And the Buddha and the Dalai Lama does say that what we all want is to be happy. We want to be happy and we want to suffer less, because it's our mind that causes our suffering, because it's our response to certain situations. And again, in meditation, you know, we can start to let go of some of that stuff as well. So part of it is about letting go of that craving, letting go of that aversion. And actually with the delusion, what we start to do when we're meditating, hi, come in, there's plenty of seats. What we start to do is develop clarity. Our mind becomes clearer because we're focusing on one thing. And that one thing can be our breath, or it can be cultivating what we call metta or loving kindness towards all beings. So it is about developing clarity. It helps our mind to become clear. It helps our mind to become more integrated. So we get to know ourselves better. We get to know what we want. We get to know how to be in the moment. I mean, I don't know if anybody else experiences it, but I certainly experience this. I used to experience it on holidays, but I experience it on retreats now, that if I'm really having a good retreat, which is most of the time, I don't think I've ever had a bad one, then I'm thinking about when's the next one. So I'm not actually in the present moment experiencing that retreat and getting the real pleasure from it. So with meditation, when we're working with our minds and our emotions, we can actually gain more pleasure in the simple things of life. Yeah. So there's a few reasons, I think, to meditate. I mean, I'll share why I started meditating, which is about 20 years ago now. I was a detached youth worker, so I worked on the streets with young people. And I was having therapy, and I knew my own personal conditioning would affect how I worked with those young people. And so what I wanted to do was be in the best possible psychological health I could be to work with those young people, because I could help them. So in a way, it was an altruistic action for me. It was altruistic because I wanted to be a better human being so I can engage and help other people. Because I think sometimes meditation can be seen as a bit navel-gazing and it's about self, where actually I think it's the complete opposite. It is about ourselves and, you know, maybe how we can be happier, how we can have more clarity of mind, how we can be kinder, more thoughtful. But at the end of the day, that is about other people as well. Because if we're helping ourselves, we are automatically helping other people. And in a way, that's what inspires me. Helping self and other. Yes. So any questions so far? Yeah. The delusion, okay, which is the pig. Yeah, the delusion. How can I say this, explain that? Because the Buddha sees reality in a particular way. And a simple way to put this is a simple example is, you know, you see your friend walking down the other side of the road and you wave to them and they don't wave back. So our minds might go into all sorts of stories about, oh, they don't like me anymore, or they're ignoring me, or I've upset them, or all this stuff that comes up, which is kind of a bit deluded, when in fact the other person might not have just seen you. I mean, that's a very simple example about delusion, but we're also deluded in what's actually going to make us ultimately happy and content, because we crave after things that we think are going to make us happy and content, where in fact they might not be doing that. And, you know, we might get ourselves in all sorts of tricky situations in craving after particular things that aren't going to bring us happiness. I don't know, has anybody got any examples? I'm trying to think of one myself now. You know, there is that, you know, well, for me it was a job, you know, having a particular job was going to give me a particular status and was going to make me happy. And actually, I mean, it did make me happy a little bit. It didn't make me really miserable, but it caused me more stress than made me happy, really. And so in a way, that was a everyday experience of being slightly deluded. And from the Buddhist perspective, on the much broader perspective, is that we're deluded about the reality of ourselves, the reality of mind. And one of the things is that we're all interconnected. And the reality is that we're all interconnected with each other and with every, what we say, living thing, you know, even the trees, you know, this room, what, any type of material, we're all connected and we all have an effect, and that things arise upon conditions. I mean, that's the ultimate, you know, going into that end of it, that things, from the Buddhist perspective, things arise upon conditions. And if you take one of those things out of the way, then that condition won't arise. And that's where we begin to get more clarity of mind. Does that make sense?
Can you relate to that? That sounds very interesting. In terms of conditions arising.
Yeah, the conditions arising. Well, the Buddha's teaching, its main core teaching is conditionality. Things arise upon certain conditions. So let's think of one thing in particular. So if there was a group of people together, they might be having a certain conversation. I mean, this is on a sort of, well, I'm trying to keep it on an everyday basis. They might be having a certain conversation. They might get into an argument. But if one of those people weren't there with their view, the conversation would be completely different. Just, you know, trying to put it in that sort of context. Yeah. I mean, obviously there's a much bigger perspective of that about, yeah, being born, etc., etc., certain conditions being in place, you know, for us to be born. So, yeah. Okay. Any more questions at the moment? Can I just ask if anybody's made New Year's resolutions? Nobody. Amazing. I'm impressed. Good for you. I mean, that was one of the things that kind of occurred to me, really, is this thing about New Year's resolutions, which is part, you know, which is part of our culture. You know, it's well, I'm not sure if it's harmless, actually, but it's certainly part of our culture. And quite often we say, oh, we want to give this up, or we want to do more of this. It's usually want to give this up or want to do more of this. So it's usually one or the other. And I think with meditation, it can really help. If you want to give up something or start doing something, might even be meditation, then the meditation and the focus can help you actually do that in a way that, you know, if you practice meditation each day. And also it's also about, if there are any of those things that you want to either give up or do that you're not doing, you know, there's an unsatisfactoriness in yourself as well. And with meditation, there is a big aspect of accepting ourselves as we are at this very moment and being kind to ourselves. Just as we are, you know, we don't need to change. We might want to work on our mind, which might be different, and we have what we call some scars. So there are things that we might want to change, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know, because, you know, we want to move forward. You know, for me, as a committed Buddhist, you know, I want to move forward. So why I meditate today might be different to why I was meditating. Well, it is why I was meditating 20 years ago. But there's still a focus to actually do that, and there are still aspects of my conditioning, my tendencies that I would like to let go of. And actually, what we find in meditation, rather than craving to have it or having the aversion to let go of it and not wanting it, actually just allowing it to be, it kind of falls away. So it doesn't mean that there's not any effort in meditation. It just means that by meditating, that these things become a bit looser, because we quite often we're quite tight in our minds, and it's about loosening that, really, and loosening that attachment even to some of those things that we do that we would like to change. So are there any more questions, or anybody like to share anything about meditation?
Well, I just wonder, the biggest problem I have is the chatter, the monkey mind going on.
Have
you got any advice and tips about that?
The monkey mind. Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I think that's a really good point, because I think one of the things when we start to meditate is we really notice how busy our minds are. And in a way, that's kind of the job of the mind, because the mind is sorting our day out, our life out in a particular way, depending on, you know, who we are. So when we sit down, we do notice a lot more what's going on in our mind, that there's a lot of thoughts going on, there's lots of projections going on, there's a lot of emotions going on. And the only way really, well, the only way, one of the ways to work with that is to sit with it and just keep, I mean, if you're doing the mindfulness of breathing, just keep coming back to the one-pointedness of what you're focusing on. And not, what the idea is not to hold on to the stories that come along with the thoughts, because we'll have thoughts. I mean, the thing that they think that is said that, you know, mindfulness or meditation is about letting go of our thoughts is kind of almost impossible. So if you're going to sit down and think you're going to have a blank mind, then you're going to be disappointed probably. But what will happen is you'll have thoughts, and how I like to put it is, you know, you can have these nice white fluffy thoughts that come along like clouds in a blue sky, and just let them pass. You know, if you're thinking, oh, I've got to do the shopping, just let the shopping pass and don't start making the list. And if you find yourself making the list, then just come back to the meditation. And then, but we might have some dark clouds that come along as well. And again, it's exactly the same, just letting them pass and not get into the whole story that's being held in that cloud, if you like, and just allowing it to pass. Because what you're actually doing when you're doing a sitting meditation and allowing those thoughts to pass is you're practicing for when you're off the cushion. And then when you get to a certain point of practicing off the cushion, when you're in a certain situation and you might have a reaction and there are certain thoughts going on, you get to the point of, oh, there's that thought again. So you might not react in the same way. You can have that gap. We call it a gap. So you can have that gap before you react with the other person or the other thing, whatever it is. And that just becomes a lot easier the more you meditate, really.
Yeah. What's the gap?
The gap before you react. So I'm talking about when you're off the cushion and you're interacting maybe with somebody. Instead of just reacting, like, I don't know, so I might get agitated by something, by somebody, so I want to react to that. If you have the gap, what we call, then you don't react and you just kind of take a breath, let go of that thought, and then just carry on with the conversation. Hi, welcome. Come in. There are some spaces down here.
You were talking about the passing clouds.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of crossovers with various meditations. Yeah, I mean, it's just a technique really that can be used in different traditions. It's just one technique that can be used to, you know, not hold on to the thoughts and just let them pass by.
Some people meditate with an ulterior motive. Trying to awaken the third eye.
Okay.
And that is an expectation in itself, and the expectation is the same. The more you crave, the more you don't want it to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So the more you crave, the more you don't want it to happen. There are some seats down here if you're happy to come sit down here. Sorry, I was a bit distracted. So can you just repeat that last bit again for me?
Yeah, sense. Yeah. The one that awakened the third eye, the third eye, the pineal gland.
Uh-huh.
So you were saying that the more you crave, the more you don't want it to happen, so you want to happen.
Is it something that you teach here at the center?
It's not, no, we don't particularly teach that. I mean, we teach two meditations, which is mindfulness of breathing, which is focused on the breath, and the metta bhavana, which is about developing kindness, loving kindness towards ourselves and others. We don't really do the kind of the third eye, opening the third eye meditations. So, but with either of those meditations, with the mindfulness or the metta bhavana, you know, the more you practice, the more the craving will fall away. Yeah, any of those three poisons, that they will slowly fall away. But, you know, that's in a bigger perspective. But what will fall away is what you're conscious of, or maybe what you want to change, or what you want to go towards. Because the mind will hook itself onto anything. It doesn't really like to be quiet, actually, I don't think. I think the mind quite likes to be busy. And I think that's the other thing with meditation, is about, it's active, it's not passive. So it is about actually working with our minds. I mean, there are some practices where you're just sitting, but, you know, you are still working with your mind in whatever activity it is. So whatever meditation it is, you're still going to be working with the mind, being aware of the mind. But I think that's it with meditation. We become aware of the mind, because the rest of our life, we're actually not. We're just on automatic pilot doing whatever it is that we're doing. We don't have that much awareness about our mind or our bodies, actually, and how the two are connected. Yeah.
Very often when we read about meditation, we come across the phrase that the goal of the meditation is to empty the mind.
Okay.
Is that true? Or, I know somehow you already answered that question.
Is there a truth? I'm not.
It's like ultimate goal of meditation.
It's to empty the mind. I suppose my question.
Empty your mind.
Yeah. I mean, my question for that is, why would we want our mind empty? For me, in our practices, it's not about emptying our mind. It's about becoming aware of our mind. And there is something about creating more space in our mind. I acknowledge that. But if our mind was empty, we wouldn't be able to function. You know, we wouldn't be able to breathe. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? It depends what you call in mind as well, in a way. You know, the universal mind or the whole body mind. So it's about making space. Yeah, I would say, you know, you can make more space. So, you know, when we've got all this chatter going on in our head that happens when we're not aware of it, and when we sit, we become more aware of it. If we meditate, it slows down. It does slow down, and there is less chatter. Because we're just allowing it to be, really. So I wouldn't say that the mind is empty, but it can certainly slow down and feel more, and it can be more spacious. Yeah. Which then, you know, can let in other aspects of meditation and other aspects of the universe, so to speak. But on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I noticed the other day, how many people travel on the Central Line? A few of you. Well, you're amazing, that's all I can say. When I came home on the Central Line the other day in the rush hour, and my goodness, I had to let three trains go by before I could get on. And then, I mean, it's just inhuman, really. It's just awful. But well, this was just last week, but what I noticed, and I thought, oh yeah, this is okay, and you know, and it was all right, and I got off, and then I got home, and I was saying to people, oh, I've been on Central Line, it's terrible. And then what I really noticed at that point is I went into the freezer to get some bread, and I got really irritated trying to get the drawer back in the freezer. And I just thought, this is from being on the Central Line. And you know, because I'd obviously had some reaction to it without giving it too much attention. And I got quite irritated, and it was playing out somewhere else at a different time, you know, 15, 20 minutes later at home, because I couldn't get the freezer drawer in back into the freezer, which is a silly thing to get irritated about, because it's nobody's fault apart from myself, possibly. But I just had that realization right there, oh, this is because of this, you know, being on the Central Line and being quite irritated by that.
Great idea for the courses, standing meditation on Central Line.
Yes, absolutely. yes, yes. Central line meditation.
I've done it in the past, actually. It helped.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure it would do. Yeah. But what I suppose what my giving that example is about, you know, something might have an effect on us. We might not know about it in that moment. I mean, I was aware that it was quite unpleasant. But then that irritation can come out in a different way, in a different place. And that's, for me, partly what meditation's about. Obviously, I've still got more to do. That's partly what meditation's about, is being aware of that. And so not taking it out on the drawer in the freezer or another person. It's like, straight away, it was like, oh, that's because I, you know, got stressed out on the central line. So meditation can help us in that daily way, even if you don't go on the central line. Okay, it's a good question. It entirely depends on you. It depends which meditation you're doing, but I would personally recommend 20 minutes, if you can, to start with. It depends on people's lifestyles. It depends on your priorities, what you want to do. But I would say, you know, 20 minutes, you know, by the time you set yourself up, you know, sitting for a few minutes, staying in that situation a bit longer and time you finish is 20 minutes would be good.
And do you feel any benefit from doing it back in the morning or in the evening?
I think it depends on the individual. Some people just aren't morning people, so they tend to meditate in the evening. I tend to meditate in the morning. I think most people feel the benefit if they meditate in the morning, but again, it depends mainly on people's lifestyles. Yeah, most people feel the benefit in the morning because it kind of, you know, for me, it sets me up for the day. And I think what's most important more than anything really is a routine. You know, if you can have a routine of doing it at the same time every day or every 2 days, then you will notice a difference because it is cumulative. It does have an effect. You might not think it's doing much. You might think, oh, I'm still doing this, I'm still doing that. But it is still having an effect. And I think for me, that's one of the reasons in meditation why I say it's active, because we're, you know, we're actively engaging in something of working with our minds, yeah, without being willful. That's the other thing, you know, it's a just looking rather than being willful about it, which again is another practice. Yes.
So I find it like really hard to meditate because my mind just kind of, I sort of start thinking about my problems. Well, yeah, my problems just sort of sorting my life out, and then I just don't feel like they would put their effort in. Well, I try, but then as I'm doing it, I feel like, oh, well, I'm just going to sort out my problem.
Uh-huh.
Like, I can't, like, I know it's good for me, but I can't convince myself to do it whilst I'm doing it. It's
okay.
Strange.
Mm-hmm.
So what I started doing is I do yoga instead, because then I'm concentrating on
doing something physical.
Thinking, so
yeah.
Then I kind of concentrate on feeling. But would you say I should try to stick to like maybe doing the meditation as well, like even though I'm sitting there thinking,
mm-hmm,
like, wow, I didn't really like get myself to do it. I don't know what's going to not be able to do it, convince myself to, even though I know I've read about the benefits, everything, and when I can do it, it's amazing, but I just struggle.
That's another very interesting question about people not being able to meditate. I don't particularly think there is such a thing, really. Again, it's how we work with our minds in that, because if you're feeling, either you haven't got the motivation to do it because it's not quite working for you, that's a good reason to meditate and just sit and try to experience that reaction that you're having, because you're just having a reaction. I mean, there might be something for you as well with your physical body that wants to move, so it might be helpful to do some yoga, do some movement, and then try to sit and meditate. I mean, a lot of people would do that. They do yoga or qigong and then meditate, because there is that kind of physical release as well, and it relaxes the body, and it is important to be, you know, the meditation, although I've been talking about mind a lot, the meditation is in our whole body. So I would say just try and practice with it. Yeah. Yeah. If you want to, if that's more comfortable for you, definitely. But you just need to be aware that, you know, you're not sleeping, obviously. I think a lot of people maybe that lie down because they need to for health reasons, would keep their eyes open, just to make sure they don't nod off. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with nodding off, but as long as you're aware that you're tired and that's what you're doing. But if that's what you find most comfortable. But there is something about how we actually sit in meditation that allows the energies to go through us quite naturally, which is when we're sitting on, which is why we sit like you're sitting perfectly, while we sit on the cushions. Yeah, but you know, if people, some people need to lie down, that's absolutely fine. Yeah, or sit on a chair. Yeah. Any more questions about meditation? Yes.
So sometimes when I do it, I find like, and if I try to sit in a certain position, I find that my knees start to hurt and my back really starts to hurt.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's something that I should, like if I carry on doing it, it will go away, or if I just should pay attention to that and maybe sit in a chair.
Yeah, the idea is that you don't hurt when you're sitting meditating. If you're physically in pain constantly, then I would suggest that you move, either try a different position or sit in the chair. That's really, really important, because you know, otherwise you're just going to be completely distracted by your physical being. Yeah, I mean, sometimes when we're meditating and we're staying in one position for a while, there is going to be the odd twinge or the odd ache. I mean, and it's up to you to judge whether that's okay or not for your body. I mean, it's only you that can know that, but certainly the idea isn't to be sitting in any pain at all. Yeah, but then you need to know whether it's a physical pain, or maybe it could even be something emotionally going on that you actually want to move and you're feeling the pain in your body. Again, it's trying to be aware of that difference.
I would have thought that there's a reason that Lord Buddha meditates in the lotus position, very straight back. I suppose it would be in alignment of the chakra too well, the source,
uh-huh,
uh-huh, and to the base, the planet,
mm-hmm,
anchoring the energies to the planet.
Yeah. I mean, I don't actually know for certain, but I think there's various reasons. One, I think it's probably cultural, because people in India, particularly at that time and nowadays, are more likely to sit on the floor cross-legged than Westerners. So I think that's one of the important things. I mean, but it is about the energy levels being in line with each other as well. Yeah. Anything else? So other reasons for meditation? I mean, there is, you know, I've been talking about quite a lot of the psychological reasons to meditate that can help us in our daily lives. But, you know, there is a spiritual aspect of meditation as well, the transcendental aspect of meditation that helps us get in contact with something higher than ourselves. So there is that aspect to meditation as well, particularly, you know, if you're joining a religious order or you're taking it that bit further. The idea is that, you know, we're contacting something higher than ourselves, whatever that may be, which we talk about improving our lives in a particular way. We're looking for something spiritual, something other than just ourselves and just what we see life as in front of us. And go, you know, and as I've said, you know, going beyond our own samskaras, our own conditioning, our own tendencies, if that's what we want to do, and that's what meditation can do for us. Yeah. So is there anybody else that's got experience of meditating? From the sort of I asked it right at the beginning, is there anybody else that's coming a bit later? Okay. Is that here or, yeah?
Yeah, and before other places as well.
Okay. So have you found it different, the different places that you've been to?
Yes. I mean, when I came here, I started about a year ago, so I learned the two meditations each year.
Mm-hmm.
So previously, more kind of secular mindfulness meditations.
Okay, yeah.
And a Vipassana retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. And how have you found that it's helped you, or what's your motivation to meditate?
I think when I started, probably maybe 7 years ago now, it was more to help with kind of concentration,
mm-hmm.
studying. I was when I went back to university,
kind
of slightly more practical reasons, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think coming here has really built it into a much more holistic system, and things like the metta bhavana, the kind of loving kindness,
mm-hmm.
Meditations, just understanding how integrated the whole system is in terms of how we relate to other people,
okay.
How we relate to ourselves,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Certainly not just about kind of health in any kind of segregated way.
Sure, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's brought a lot of things together.
Yeah. And I think there too, there's a couple of things there that's really important. There's the concentration. I mean, that's one thing that mindfulness and metta bhavana can do. But mindfulness in particular is to help us to concentrate better. And there is some evidence, you know, with people maybe with ADHD or ADD, it can improve people's level of concentration. I mean, I don't know, people had this experience that I've certainly had is, you know, enjoying reading a book and then you've turned the page and you actually have no idea what that page was about. So you have to go back and read it again. It's that kind of concentration that we can improve on. So you don't have to keep reading, you don't have to keep going backwards. But yeah, so really mindfulness of breathing is really good for improving our levels of concentration. And metta bhavana for developing our kindness and our empathy for ourselves and other people. And together, both of those are much more integrating, because what we find in our lives, generally, we're quite fractured and we're going off doing several different things. There's this strange thing, and I'm sure you've all heard about it, is multitasking, which seems to be like, you know, if you can multitask, then you've kind of made it. And actually, the brain and the mind really doesn't like multitasking. And actually, that's one of the things that causes us more stress than anything else. And actually, it has been proven that if we can be more mindful in our daily lives and in our work and not do so much of the multitasking, we can actually be more productive, which is very interesting, very, very interesting, that we can be more productive in our daily lives if we're not trying to do several things at the same time, and that actually we can do them really well, and that includes, you know, our relationships with other people, with those we love and those that we just see in the street, really. So I think there is something for me still around why to meditate, just bringing in the metta bhavana aspect of it. Is about the altruistic aspect, you know, is about trying to be kinder to myself, but trying to be kinder to other people. And that can be in the smallest ways each day. It can be smiling at the person at the till or at the train station. And it's surprising, actually, I did this exercise years ago now, walking over London Bridge, which is another bit like the Central Line, isn't it? Walking over London Bridge and actually smiling at people. Some people look totally shocked. But quite a few people actually smile back, and it, you know, try it. You know, if you just walk down the street and smile at people, it's quite amazing what can happen. For me, that's one of the motivations is, you know, that there's a combination there of being mindful of other people, but also trying to respond to them as a human being, not just another body that's walking past you or serving you or something like that. And developing that very kind, open heart towards others.
Yeah, I think absolutely. That thing of a stranger smiling at you can make your day.
Yeah. You've had that kind of experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can make a big difference, can't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions? So maybe there's a question for me to ask any of you. Why would you want to meditate? What's your motivation?
Yeah,
What's your motivation for coming to a talk about why to meditate? Okay.
I just do it independently at home, but I'd like to sort of go into more depth and speak to it and learn more about it. You know.
Okay, And I think that's a really good point, you know, if it is accumulative. So you notice if you do it on a regular basis, that you're calmer and less ratty. And if you stop, then those tendencies come back a little bit. I think that's a really good point. And that's, you know, that helps you, doesn't it? That helps how you're feeling about yourself and your mental state, and it helps others that you're engaging with. Okay.
Well, I think every one of us is like looking for something. We don't know what it is. We can call it happiness. We can call it enlightenment. But there is something inside us, or at least inside me, that pushed me to look for it. So that's why my motivation to meditate.
Okay, so you're looking for something else, something more meaningful in life, or?
Yes, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe to answer the question that who I am and who people are.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they're big questions, aren't they? Who am I and who are you? They're big questions. And I do think, have you found that meditation helps to get in touch with yourself, or?
Of course.
Yeah.
I found like a center, so a place where I'm like at home. But like a home with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, actually, because it is partly about, you know, where is our home? And I have heard other people talk about, you know, our home is where I am. You know, it's an inner feeling that we're at home with ourselves. And I think that's quite important. And exploring, you know, what we're actually looking for, and it goes back to the delusion thing, you know, what is actually going to make us happy? You know, what is going to make us content? What is going to make us experience equanimity? And I think the meditation is a good tool to actually start experiencing more of those.
Well, basically, it's to clear the illusion and distractions of life, and so rediscover your true self and a connection with source.
I mean, there is that. Yeah, there's definitely that. And it's how we do that on a daily basis. You know, when we're going to work, when we're feeding the dog, or, I don't know, changing the baby's nappy, whatever it might be, you know, it's how we maintain that connection with ourselves and others. And meditation can give us that space in our mind to actually do that, I think. Yeah, but there is also, you know, just sitting and being open to, and being receptive, I guess, just being receptive to what comes to us, you know, from wherever it is coming from. I think receptivity is a really positive thing to work in meditation as well. Because although we're working in meditation, and it's good to actually be aware of our minds, be aware of ourselves, get to know ourselves a lot better, there is something about being receptive to what comes our way as well. Yeah.
What is the best way to project love towards other people during the loving kindness meditation? I found it very difficult. That was my first session in the drop-in afternoon class last Friday.
Okay.
And it's just, although I visualized my sister, who I love dearly, the fact that projecting love, cultivating, and you mentioned that you've been doing that kind of meditation now for a very long time. So what would be your personal tip? Maybe it was just the commentary that was going with the meditation. It's not that I feel of hatred towards people, not at all.
Just
it's that aspect.
I suppose there's something about what you're talking about trying to project that love. What what do you actually
mean?
Actually,
I don't know. I just found it so difficult.
Okay. Okay. So you, what were you actually doing in the meditation? That's
trying to visualize the person who I already love, and
yeah,
trying to cultivate that love towards the person.
Okay.
And then just expand it, expand that person to be your colleagues or the people on central line.
Yes.
And then to the whole of the world.
Yeah,
it was
sure.
Just because it was a tester
sure.
session.
Yeah. I think there's, I mean, I think that the metta bhavana can be a bit of a challenge for people in various ways. One about experiencing that emotion, if you like, that positive emotion, we call it. But if you bring into mind somebody that you're in good harmony with, that you do love, I think, it's, you know, for me, it's about sitting there and just experiencing those feelings that you've got. You know, if you've got those feelings, then dwell in those positive feelings, really, that dwell in those positive mental states and just try and sit and see how that feels. And I think when we get connected with that feeling of love, of kindness, that positive mental state, then we get a flavour of what we're trying to develop in the other stages and for other people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So just for people know, but who don't know, in the Metta Bhavana, we call it the Metta Bhavana, which is a loving kindness meditation. There's five stages to it, and we develop loving kindness towards ourselves, then to a good friend, then to somebody neutral, then to somebody we're not getting on particularly well with, and then we spread that out as far as you want to go. It might be Bethnal Green, it might be London, it might be the whole universe. So it's a five-stage meditation on loving kindness, just so you know that, you know, what we're talking about. Yeah.
It's a remarkable philosophy.
Yeah. And it can transform. Unconditional love, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it can transform our relationships. I think that's a really, really important point. You know, if we are, particularly if we're having difficulties in a relationship or somebody at work or partner or whoever, it can transform those relationships because, you know, if we're developing more kindness towards them, what we're actually seeing is that person as a whole human being. Not that bit that we're just annoyed with, you know. Then we start to see that they've got their vulnerabilities, that they just want to be loved, they just want to be happy. And once we can see somebody in a bigger perspective, then we do automatically have a different response to them. And, you know, for me, that's another motivation, particularly for that meditation, is that starting to see ourselves and other people bigger than what our mind kind of tells us or our emotions tell us at that point. Yeah, that's a really important point, thank you. Anything else? Anybody got any more questions or want to share anything? So can I just ask, do people, I mean, people here, because, you know, those particularly that haven't meditated, because you want to find out about meditation, do people feel this kind of little flicker of wanting to meditate but not quite sure why, or? Just come along to find out why to meditate. Or maybe why Buddhists meditate in particular. I think that's another, you know, because we're not the only.
Yeah, why do you meditate?
What, Buddhists or me personally?
Buddhists. Yeah, Buddhists.
Yeah,
you could sum it up.
Could sum it up, yeah. Because the Buddha
or
did.
Or practical.
Well, you know, yeah, that's a good point. The Buddha actually attained enlightenment whilst he was meditating, and he was doing the mindfulness meditation, we believe. When he gained enlightenment, so he overcame various mental states and definitely overcame what I was talking about, the three poisons, greed, hatred and delusion. So he sat there in his enlightenment. Obviously it's a lot more than I'm going to explain right now, but he sat there without having any hatred, only having compassion. He sat in compassion and could see the world exactly as it was. And the Buddha taught that to other people. And what the Buddha actually said is, look, this is what happened to me. He saw the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, and said, you know, if you try this as well, see what happens for you. You know, he wasn't saying this is the right way, this is the best way, but it was very encouraging for people to try it and see what happened. And so for Buddhists, and particularly Theravada Buddhists, it's an important part of our daily practice. And our founder, Bhante Sangharakshita, would certainly encourage us to meditate at least on a daily basis, so we can move towards what we call having insight into reality and move towards enlightenment. You know, it sounds grand, I know, and who knows, you know, how many lifetimes that might take, but, you know, that's ultimately what we're moving towards. But at the same time, keeping that imbalance in how we can be different in our daily lives that can benefit ourselves and other beings. Okay. Anything else just before we kind of wind up? Well, there are meditation sessions that are here at, what time's the next one? Time's the next one. Wonderful yoga. I'm not sure actually. 2:15, thank you. So yeah, there is, you know, if you want to actually try some meditation, somebody will be teaching that 2:15 in the other shrine room, which is just past reception around the corner. So I'd encourage you to go and have a go if you have the time. Because it's not really nice outside, so you might as well. Okay, thank you very much for coming and listening. Thank you. Thank you.